Seattle has a new plan to at least partially democratize campaign finance, or an experiment to move in that direction anyway. And some conservatives are not happy about it. They've got a new democracy voucher program that provides every eligible Seattle resident with $100 in taxpayer funded vouchers to donate to the candidates of their choice. So that means that theoretically, regardless of whether you're one of the privileged who can give thousands upon thousands of dollars in every election, or you're a person who even giving $10 or $20 is difficult, you now will have the opportunity to exercise your speech in the form of money. Now, this program was created by a voter approved ballot measure back in November of 2015. It's funded by a 10-year, $30 million property tax levy. That's where the trouble is going to come from. Registered voters are automatically sent the vouchers. Those who are not registered and those without a permanent address, such as homeless people, can apply by mail or in person with a city commission. Now, this of course also encourages people to register because they'll get access to that free money to participate with. But if you aren't, you still can get it, of course, which is good to see. And it's already making a big difference, at least for certain candidates. John Grant is a leftist city council candidate. He's made the vouchers one of the centerpieces of his campaign and activism in regards to the homeless specifically. Of the $145,933 in donations that he's received, almost all of it has come from those vouchers. And so, of course, he's a big proponent of it. He said specifically, "I took a pledge not to accept any money from corporations and developers. I wanted to show that democracy vouchers can support grassroots campaigns that want to address systemic issues like homelessness." And if you think about the whole city having access to these vouchers, it means that candidates who want to get elected citywide, now they can't just go to one or two big donors or corporations. They theoretically can use the sort of path that John Grant is using, that people like Bernie Sanders have used, where you appeal to the actual people whose voices will be amplified by this experiment.
So conservatives should celebrate this because they think money is speech. So what this does is it allows more people to speak. So celebrating our freedom of speech, and they told us that no, it's not that the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and all those guys want to just legally bribe politicians. No, they don't want to do that. They just want to speak because they love freedom of speech,
right? They love speaking.
Now all of a sudden, when in Seattle, you guys have freedom of speech by their definition, they get. Nah, we don't like it when you speak.
Yeah.
They're opposed to this program.
So there's a lawsuit. The libertarian law firm Pacific Legal Foundation is representing two Seattle homeowners in their lawsuit against the city. They allege that democracy vouchers violate their First Amendment rights because their taxes are funding candidates they oppose. And for those particular people, I'm sure that that's the big thing. But the property tax by itself is going to always have the repercussions. There's going to be legal repercussions from those who have to pay it.
This is brilliant. I mean, like the lawsuit sucks, but the fact that property taxes are being given, used as vouchers and being given to homeless people to then be able to vote for the candidate they want in their city is amazing. I'm from San Francisco. We have a horrible, probably one of the most unequal cities in this country. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a tech boom and a raging homelessness problem. And you know, and it is not going away anytime soon. And I would love to see San Francisco implement this. You will see changes. I mean, this is democracy in action. It's amazing. But wow, property taxes given to homeless people to vote with their dollars and have speech with money is the only speech that counts, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so now I love that lawsuit because of how hilarious it is on a couple of counts. So they say, okay, look, because of the First Amendment, rich people get to speak in elections by putting in literally billions of dollars into campaign contributions and independent expenditures. Right. So First Amendment allows rich people to speak, okay? The First Amendment also shuts up poor people because according to this lawsuit, the First Amendment, their First Amendment rights, the rich and property people's First Amendment rights means you shut the hell up. I'm not giving you any democracy vouchers. We're not doing public financing. You're not gonna get any voice. I get all the voice, you get none of the voice. You see how I believe in the First Amendment?
Yeah, that's amazing how that works out.
Yeah, it is funny how that worked out. Now, are they gonna win? Because you might get seduced into that argument. Like, wait a minute, if I'm opposed to something and my taxes are used for a program that I disagree with, maybe that does violate my freedom of speech. It has like kind of an interesting ring to it, right? No. Your taxes are used for things you disagree with all the time. my taxes were used to invade Iraq. I really, really disagree with that.
Oh yeah.
Just because my taxes were used
you
for that.
You should sue.
Yeah.
Good luck with that lawsuit, right?
We should.
Just because I disagreed with a government action that was taken with my taxpayer money doesn't mean they violated my First Amendment rights. I also could speak out against the Iraq war and did.
Yeah.
That's my First Amendment right. Not that you get to use taxes for only the things I agree with.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, conservatives, you want to really tango on that one? Okay, let's go to the polls and find out what the American people are actually in favor of. And then if you do anything opposite to that, like tax cuts for the rich, sorry, you violated our First Amendment rights.
Yeah.
Oh, subsidies, you take our taxpayer money and give it to oil companies, the most profitable, richest companies in the world. Sorry, you violated my First Amendment rights. I don't agree to that, right?
That is not
a real legal claim. It's just a way to try to shut regular people up and maintain power only for the rich.
Libertarian law firm? How many libertarian law firms are there?
What is that
and like,
to mean?
where's the lawsuit against like all this dark money against the Koch brothers? I mean, honestly, this is the this is the libertarian sort of like insane circle jerk that is just like, when are we decrying all the money that is in our politics here?
Yeah. Devil's advocate, possibly, especially because you're on the panel. First of all, I want to say that these sorts of experiments happening in cities and states, I think, is one of the best things about America that we can do this. That's why I make so many videos about things like the experiments with basic income, like Hawaii is considering right now. The independent redistricting commissions and the higher minimum wages in cities, all that. Devil's advocate though, theoretically, and I know that they're not mutually exclusive, if the problem is money in politics, is the solution more money in politics? Because this program does sort of say money is speech, speech is money.
Yeah, so it's a
devil's advocate, you bastards.
Okay, hold on. So it's a perfectly good question. So that's why I am not spending our energy, meaning what I push for and Wolfpack, in this direction. Because I think we should go in the opposite direction of money is not speech. And we should just publicly finance all elections, period. Period. Okay? No private financing. So I'm not giving you a $100 voucher while the Koch brothers have $400 million they're gonna put into this election cycle. Yeah. No, I'm gonna take all the money out. If you privately finance elections, you will have representatives working for the people who finance them. If you publicly finance elections, they might actually work for you, the public. So one thing that is overplayed, in my opinion, about this legislation is that people keep talking about the homeless, but no, everybody gets the voucher. I mean, the homeless also gets the voucher, which is amazing, right? Because in our world, we're like, homeless, do you even care? Are you even human, right? Mm-hmm. So yes, we've treated them as homo sapiens, amazing, great, congratulations. But everybody gets the voucher. You're a carpenter, you're a small business owner, you work for minimum wage, you get the voucher, okay? So it is not my preferred route, but it is way better than the current system. Yeah. So I wanna support all the people doing different kinds of experimentation to get to the right answer. I happen to think there's a little bit of overemphasis in this particular track, but they got it done in Seattle, and I want them to succeed. And maybe, by the way, maybe that is the better track. Let's find out, right? Mm-hmm. And it's certainly way, way better than what we have now. Mm-hmm. It at least evens the playing field a little bit. So great credit to the people who got it done. And if the courts reject this, for Christ's sake. The problem with the courts is that politicians appoint them, and politicians are now almost completely corrupted, and it's going upstream towards the courts, and it has, and that's why the Supreme Court is corrupted. So we gotta hurry. That's why, again, I want an amendment to end all this nonsense. The only thing above the courts is an amendment. So let's do both, though. If you're in this, you're doing this, God's speed to you, and we all got your back. But let's also make sure we get an amendment to end all the nonsense. So wolf-pack.com to do that. Mm. Okay, we gotta take a break, guys. When we come back, there's both a very serious story. What are people doing to punish women who, it's not even an abortion, it's stillbirth. I mean, that story is devastating. But then we're gonna go completely light and tell you what's going on in Chinese porn. Okay, it's an important story about freedom of speech.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks, Cenk, John, and Francesca. We got some tweets for you guys. The Drunken Monk writes in, if people could choose what their taxes go to, things would change a lot. Indeed. Greg Rogers writes in, John, when you crash the drone into the water, it is going to be a very cold swim to get it back.
Don't let anyone know what the trip is.
Yeah, don't crash the drone.
By the way, you think they're going to let me control the drone?
No. Okay.
No way.
All right, then Taylor, don't crash the drone.
Yes. Okay.
Danger Carlos Danger writes in, well, this is awkward, Cenk. We're wearing the same t-shirt. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying shoptyt.com. He put it in. Is that our Carlos, by the way?
I think it's on him to change at this point.
Yeah. All right, so here, Carlos, since you're the only one who can see yourself wearing that t-shirt, you decide who wore it better. So I love this. This is, I wore it totally by accident. We are the ones who knock, the Young Turks.
Uh-huh. Lord of the Rings.
No.
Where is it from?
Yeah, yeah. When they get to Bree, they.
It's from Divergent. Okay.
It's from Game of Thrones. Hold the door. Wait, but we're the ones who knock. No, it's from Breaking Bad. And so it's a lot of people.
Was that an El Tuco line, or that's just tight?
I don't get it either.
Okay. Oh, you didn't watch Breaking Bad?
I watched Breaking Bad,
but we are the ones who knock. Who said that again?
So it's Heisenberg. It's Walter White. He says to his wife. His wife's panicked that somebody's going to come to the door and kill him. Right. And he says, no, no, you're not understanding it. I'm not in danger. I am the danger.
Okay, that's
fine. I'm the one who knocks.
Love it.
I was like, oh, yes, that's so fucking good.
Progressive rallying cry right there.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds like Bernie's Wall Street.
I mean, and for meth dealers, but progressives as well.
So probably some overlap.
Yeah, it's some overlap.
So Francesca, John, Irina, Jen, et cetera, produced a show today. I didn't. So when I saw that, I meant to do the t-shirt thing because I loved it when I saw Democracy Spring and Our Revolution do that. I mean, they literally went to the senators' offices and said, we are the ones who knock.
Ew.
Yeah, so shoptyt.com and you get this t-shirt. Yes. Fun for everybody. All right, what's next, John?
Okay, well, what's next is an incredibly sad and serious story. In El Salvador, a teen rape victim has received 30 years in prison after a stillbirth that resulted from her rape. Her name is Evelyn Beatrice Hernandez Cruz. She gave birth into a toilet in April of 2016 after falling ill with acute back and stomach pain. Now, previous to that, she had been repeatedly raped by a gang member over several months as part of a forced sexual relationship. So even before you find out what ends up happening, that's an incredibly dark and serious situation that she had been involved in. Now, after giving birth, she was arrested when police found the deceased fetus in the toilet. She spent a week handcuffed to a hospital bed while being treated for severe anemia and a urinary tract infection and has been detained ever since. So we're talking about over a year in detainment there. But imagine, again, before we even get into the legal repercussions, she has that long period of repeated rapes. She has the terrible situation, the health problems that result from it, and they handcuff her to the bed like she had broken a law. Now, of course, in El Salvador, abortion in all cases is illegal. So she had, although she had only broken El Salvador's laws, not any sort of moral or ethical law. But anyway, she ends up going to court. The female judge accepted the prosecutor's claims that Hernandez failed to seek antenatal care because she did not want the baby and threw him into the toilet, intending to kill him. In sentencing, the judge went further and suggested that Hernandez could not have been acting alone and that her mother may also be criminally responsible. Because taking this girl who had been raped multiple times and throwing her in jail for 30 years isn't enough justice for them at this point. They want to go farther, possibly.
Yeah.
Now, Francesca, I know that you actually went down there and talked to her. I just want to make one thing clear before we go to that. So look, if you think that she, you believe the fact pattern that she delivered the baby and then threw it in the toilet, then that would be murder. Okay, so now the thing is, in this case, the medical experts were unable to ascertain whether the fetus died in utero or in the moments right after delivery. So that means obviously El Salvador has a different legal standards than we do. In America, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. That showed you right there that they obviously did not have evidence beyond a reasonable doubt that she had done that. She testified and everybody else around her said, no, that's not what happened. She had abdominal pain, didn't even know that that's what was happening, and her mom took her to the hospital. And then they realized, oh my God, she had a stillbirth, and that's what had gone into the toilet. I don't know who to believe there, except for the fact that medical experts said there's no way of knowing. And so if there's no way of knowing, you're going to charge her with murder. And know the entire context in El Salvador. If this was the only case, you could go, well, you know, he said, she said, or we can't quite tell the fact pattern. But no, they've done this to dozens of women for stillbirths, for abortions, and locking them up for long periods of time.
150 women have actually been prosecuted for abortions when they have had miscarriages. I actually met Evelyn Beatriz, who's right now 19. And when I met her in November of last year, I was down there for a story for a National Geographic channel and on their show Explorer. We did a whole segment on it. She had already been in this overcrowded prison in El Salvador for 8 months, awaiting this sentence. Now, she told me, you know, she's sort of choking back tears that she was raped and that she didn't know that she was pregnant. And so until she miscarried. Right? And this happens all the time, and you think it's ridiculous. Like, how can you, and you're like, well, how do you know? You know, how does the, you know, medical examiner know? Okay, it's illegal. That might be draconian, which I believe it is. It's illegal, but how do you know? Well, actually, it's very difficult to tell whether there has been an abortion or a miscarriage. You can't tell unless there's like, you know, lesions or, you know, whatever it is, but it is actually very difficult to tell. And she's not the first woman to have been sentenced. There are 17 women right now who are languishing in prison, who are waiting to, and they're contesting their cases, right? And there's basically one or two lawyers who represent them. One guy named Dennis Munoz. But the reason El Salvador matters, I think, for Americans is that it is a glimpse into what happens when you start to roll back abortion laws. When you start to take away the right to choose, there is no stopping it, and it snowballs. And so, for example, you can, when you start to say, "Hey, you know, we need to have, you know, we can restrict the abortions at, you know, what, the second trimester, the third, you know, the first trimester, this, and then we go back, then we go to the heartbeat, then we go to this, and then, yeah, the line between what is an abortion and what is considered murder is completely blurred.
Yeah.
And what is the result of that is women are second-class citizens. This woman, Beatriz, was not listened to. She was not believed. What the lawyer told me there is that oftentimes judges have absolutely no understanding that it is difficult to tell the difference between an abortion and a miscarriage, which is why they're sentencing these women who miscarried to, you know, to prison time.
So they understand, may not care.
Yeah.
And they might not care. And
so let's give that more context too. So you might think she didn't know she was pregnant. That's, come on. No, we've actually covered a lot of stories on this show about women who didn't know they were pregnant. It didn't lead to this kind of situation normally. Like, they'll be like, although one of the stories we covered on the air was a woman who went to the bathroom, didn't know she was pregnant, and a baby dropped out. She's like, oh my God.
Yep.
And she picked up the baby, and the baby's fine, etc. Totally different case, but it does happen from time to time. And on the miscarriage and abortion, so people who are pro-life might turn around and go, well, maybe some of those were not miscarriages, they were actually abortions, because you can't tell. And hence, they should be punished with 30 years in prison. Okay, I don't know that all of you think that, even if you're pro-life, but obviously some people in El Salvador, the government of El Salvador does. But also, it might not have been an abortion. It might have been a miscarriage. So how many women are rotting in prison in El Salvador because they had a miscarriage?
Right.
Jesus, I mean, so which brings us back to Jesus. Now that I've given you the full context of it and the ups and downs and the both sides, let me just say, we know what happened in El Salvador on a big picture. Catholic groups came in and funded a drive to pass this law. It was back in around 97 or so that this happened in the late 1990s. So almost 20 years ago. And the population is actually not in favor of it. There's a push right now to at least get an exemption for rape if the mother's life is in danger, and one other exception. But the government won't do anything about it. They refuse to have a vote so far for 4 months as people have been pushing for this.
Yeah.
So religious groups came in and said, miscarriage, you know, stillbirth, whatever, okay, no exceptions, put them in prison for 30 years if they get an abortion.
And mind you, just to put some context on this also, El Salvador is one of the most dangerous countries in the world. And also, it has the highest rate of femicide, which is murder of women, in the world. There's a reason that there is a mass influx of, you know, people seeking asylum, really, immigrants coming into Mexico, coming then to the United States from El Salvador. It is not a good place to be a woman, to be anyone. There's a lot of gang violence, as was experienced by Evelyn here. I think that the other thing to mention is there's another bill from their right-wing party, Arena, right now, that I met with the guy who's drawing it up. He wants to further criminalize abortion to be an automatic life sentence.
Well, 30 years is not enough.
No. You could get out. And meanwhile, I met a woman, young woman, who was sentenced to 30 years, another woman, right? Was sentenced, had a 3-year-old son when she was sentenced, and she was, I believe, something like around 20. She's been in there for 10 years already. Her son is 13.
Yeah. So this is the pro-life position.
This is what happens. So it's like, again, the slippery slope. Like, I think when we think about what that means for us in the United States is like, all right, like, this is why we need to defend, you know, abortion rights. This is why, you know, whether or not you're pro-life or you know, pro-choice, this is how draconian it can get.
Yeah.
When a mother's life, another situation, many situations where a mother has leukemia, needs treatment. Well, she's pregnant. And she can't, that baby will not be able to be carried to term. There's no way this baby is surviving. What do they have to do in El Salvador? The mother has to carry that baby to term. She will die, the fetus will die, but God wins? I don't know, you know. So that was another case. A judge had to rule in that, and finally this woman's life was saved. If she had a cesarean. So that it was like a birth, but not, right? She couldn't have a regular abortion. It wasn't a medical abortion. It was a cesarean.
She was in amazing shape to have surgery performed on her at that point.
Suffering from leukemia. So, like, I mean, again, I do not wish being a woman in El Salvador on anyone, and that country absolutely needs our solidarity and our support.
Which leads me to my final point, which is every once in a while in this country, justifiably, people say, oh my God, look at the way radical Muslims treat women. Whether it's the Taliban in Afghanistan or some of our allies like Saudi Arabia. Well, there's Christian Sharia law as well, and there's Christian Taliban as well. And they treat women horribly as well in cases like this. So let's not ignore that. And if you're offended that I'm calling it Christian Sharia law, that's a sad day for you. That's literally what it is.
Yeah.
So for people who are not Christians and don't believe what you believe, I don't care what your religion is. I don't care that Muslims think I shouldn't draw the Prophet Muhammad. That's like your opinion, man, but I'm not Muslim. And you think, well, women shouldn't have an abortion. Then you don't have an abortion, right? I'm not interested in your Sharia law, whether you're Muslim or you're Catholic. In this case, it was the Catholic Church particularly that had pushed forward on this bill. By the way, you're even wrong about your own Bible. You never even read it. In the Bible, it says that it is pro-abortion. God says if your wife cheated on you, give her a potion. And if you think she cheated on you, and if she aborts the baby, great. It means she did cheat on you, and it's a good thing we killed that baby. Read the Bible, it's in Numbers. I didn't say that, God said that, okay?
Give your wife a potion, that's a horrible thing to do.
Of course, and it was 2,000 years ago, the toxic thing they gave her almost certainly poisoned her, whether she cheated or didn't cheat.
Right, okay? She dies, and she was telling the truth.
Yeah.
The baby dies. She was like, how does it work again?
Yeah, so you should not impose your religion on the rest of us because we're not in your religion. Or even if we are, we don't necessarily have the same interpretation as you do. If you try to impose your religion on others, that is in a lot of ways Sharia law, or what you would call Sharia law. Sharia law is actually just the doctrines of Islam and practical life, some of which are perfectly fine, some of which are horrific, right? And like Christianity, you've got your doctrines, some of which are perfectly fine, and some of which are horrific, and we don't have an interest in your Sharia law, especially when it imprisons innocent women for 30 years after they've been raped.
And if I can make one other point, I mean, obviously the situation of El Salvador far worse than it is for people in America. And yet, I think a lot of people who've been paying attention to politics over the past decade, and especially women, probably aware that there are crazy challenges to abortion rights in states across the country where they keep dialing back how late you can get it to just ridiculous amounts where you are in the heart of most women wouldn't even know that they were pregnant when the time limit is cut off.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, those are thankfully struck down, not all of them. But like try in Texas to get an abortion right now. I mean, like if you're able to, theoretically, look forward to driving 500 miles and having to do it 2 days in a row and all that.
Right.
And a lot of these challenges that are thankfully getting struck down, thankfully it's by like district court judges that are right now weren't appointed by Donald Trump. And the Supreme Court theoretically would protect a woman's right to choose. But after a few more years of Donald Trump appointing those federal judges, and God forbid if one or two retirements came in the Supreme Court, it is not impossible to imagine that in the span of a week or two, we could be looking at for a lot of American women in El Salvador situation going on.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, we gotta take a quick break, guys. And when we come back, I promise you much lighter stories, including what China's doing about porn. I suspect you're going to be against it when we return. All right, we're back on the Young Turks. I don't have a time for a lot of tweets, but I obviously have to read this one. Michael Nathan says, Cenk is getting more ripped actually. Show that chest one more time.
Oh.
I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying.
Thanks a lot for that, Michael.
Yeah, that's actually not happening.
You're the ones who knock her.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, and Michael, you're technically wrong. I'm doing nothing but gaining weight, but thank you for trying. And Bernice Pander says, living
it's
under-
It's called bulking, Cenk.
Oh, I see.
That's the first part.
Yeah. Michael Napis, I'm sorry, Bernice Pander says, living under half the poverty level, fresh berries are a rare treat. TYT Live makes existence tolerable. Get 1 month free, tytnetwork.com/join. Thank you, Bernice, for saying that. And if you, and this is a good time to do it because you're gonna get to watch the Joe Manchin interview live as well as Keith Ellison. They're both next week. Don't miss them if you're a member. And go to tytnetwork.com/join and put the promo code FREETYT and you will get a free month of membership.
Okay. And berries.
No, we are not throwing in the berries.
I wasn't sure what the berries.
Blueberries. We're eating summer berries.
I think that that's where she was going. She's eating berries and watching us. Thank you, Bernice.
Great Friday afternoon.
And member shout outs are William Martin and Stephanie Foster. We thank our members every day, two of you guys at a time. Thank you guys. Okay, what's next, John?
Okay, we got a little bit of fun for you, maybe. China has launched the next phase on their war on internet porn. They recently put out a report with a threat to potentially close down the three largest live stream providing services inside of China. Now, important note, these services are not exclusively or even necessarily or largely about porn. We're gonna get into what the threat to porn is. But these companies, this report, the threat to them is important for them. Sina Weibo, iFang, and Akfun all saw their stock prices fall after that report. Weibo saw its stock fall 6 percentage points, which is worth $1 billion. Normally, you need some sort of Donald Trump tweet to take that much off of a company's stocks. And so, look, these are services that are important. A lot of people use them. We'll get into the stats. And it could be that theoretically, this is China. Like, there are political ramifications to any sort of social media or mass communication. But some don't think that that's what this is about. Andy Tian, the Asia Innovations Group CEO, said it's all about the porn. That's the main thing, the porn. The government has let it go for a while, but now it's getting out of hand. Understand, all internet porn is technically illegal in China. And they've even gone into banning things that don't seem like they'd necessarily be porn. Like last year, they banned live streaming of erotic banana eating. Now, if you don't know what that looks awesome. Like, here you go.
Oh my God! Okay, first
who's making those noises?
That's
is there
banned.
Just like someone in the corner, or does she re-record that? I love it.
Yeah, I like that it's got a voice track on it, right? Okay, I bought the soundtrack to that video.
Yeah.
So
it's illegal now. Don't try to bring it into China.
Number one, that's awesome. Number two, let's be honest.
Wait, which part? I'm sorry. Which part is awesome?
The erotic banana eating is. I love that we invented that as a form of exciting guys.
Yeah.
And by the way, 80% of the people doing the videos are women. 75% of the people of all live streams, 75% of the people watching are men.
It's okay. Interesting how that works out.
Yeah, it is funny. And so I love that. I think that was one of the funniest videos I've ever seen. Number two, China, you've got to allow porn. Otherwise, the only option people have is this kind of insane softcore porn.
Yeah.
Like if you ban actual porn, people are like, oh wow, look at her eat that banana. Exactly. Let them have real porn.
Otherwise, we're gonna have to watch that for a while, like the smoothie making. I want to clarify though, like I did a story in Japan similar to this. Like I think it's not even really about the sexual nature of this. It's a lot of this is just about hanging out.
Yeah.
And hanging out with this pretty lady who's gonna, you know,
make a smoothie
and dance around and like talk to me for a little bit. I mean, which I'm gonna play devil's advocate and say maybe people get offline if they can't watch it anymore. Like, cool, go out in the real world and talk to people.
I think
face
that
we tried that for centuries. It didn't really work.
Right.
No. People just want to go inside. As you point out, eating food is another big thing, not just in China, but in a lot of countries. It's a surprise that it hasn't become bigger in America, considering how much we like to eat.
Because we have real porn. Anyway, yes.
Yeah, but again, I agree with Francesca. I don't think that it's like the guys who watch the cam girls, like they give a bunch of money, and theoretically some of these girls make up to $1 million, which is a lot in America or China. They give a lot of money, these girls, like $1,000 for one session or whatever. And the girl's making so much money. If the guy just wanted porn, he could easily go to a different website in America where it is legal. It would be in higher definition, and he could see whatever he wants. I agree with Francesca. I think that it's about the connection. I think there are a lot of people, always before computers, who didn't feel connected to people, who felt too awkward or they weren't being fulfilled or whatever. And I think for a lot of people, this fills that need. And I don't think that's a small thing. I think that feeling comfortable inside of your life, satisfied and connected to people, fighting that loneliness, that is perhaps one of the biggest things that we can help people to accomplish.
We're losing track that this is the oldest thing in the world. This is called a peep show. Remember in New York, they'd go and they'd put 25 cents in and the thing would go up and you would watch the girl and the girl would make eye contact with you, which is horrifically awkward if you ask me. Mm-hmm. Same thing as strip clubs where they look at you and you're like, please stop looking. Okay, this is getting weird. Anyway, but people, yes, they like it, but it's both, it's sex and it's the interaction. That's why people flock to it. But by the way, to John's earlier point, the real reason China's doing this, yes, they're against porn, yes, they're against political dissent. And it looks like they singled out these three giant companies. No, the real thing is they single out the big companies and then they get rid of all the small companies and they tell the big companies, you better play ball and do whatever the government tells you to do and be safe. And that's how they regulate the internet. Okay, that's the real attempt here. All right, guys, much love. We have another segment for you if you're not listening on the radio. Come right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. For those of you who haven't caught on, we're on Sirius Satellite Radio now. This has been going on for a couple of months. And so some of the breaks are a little bit longer during the show. But if we take the break at 5 o'clock and say we're coming back for you guys, we're going to come right back. So we're right back here, and let's give you the rest of the stories.
Okay. It's widely known that in Hollywood, as in a lot of other fields across America, women are generally paid less than men. But in a recent interview, Emma Stone revealed how it was actually her male co-stars that made certain sacrifices to allow her to receive something approaching pay equity. She's doing interviews about this upcoming movie, Battle of the Sexes, where she plays Billie Jean King. And she had this to say, at our best right now, we're making 80 cents to the dollar. In Hollywood, it's a difficult system because it depends on the kinds of roles you're a part of, the size of your role, how much the movies make at the box office. And so much of that changes your pay throughout your career. So I go more to the blanket issue that women in general are making 4/5 at best. So that's sort of like the base level. But she said, in my career so far, I've needed my male co-stars to take a pay cut so that I may have parity with them. And that's something they do for me because they feel it's what's right and fair. That's something that's also not discussed necessarily, that our getting equal pay is going to require people to selflessly say that's what's fair. And interesting that this is not just a thing that theoretically helps out inside of one movie because of the way that you can parlay pay to later roles. She said, if my male co-star, who has a higher quote than me but believes we are equal, takes a pay cut so that I can match him, that changes my quote in the future and changes my life. She added that she's been so grateful to her male co-stars who have adjusted their pay rates. Now she, as of right now, I haven't seen where she's identified any, which makes sense because theoretically identifying one or two would identify that the others hadn't. And I'm sure that this is more widespread than just the experience of Emma Stone, but that is a good thing to see. It shouldn't be necessary. It should be the film companies that are accurately paying people for what they contribute to a movie, what they bring and all that. But until they catch up, thankfully there are some actors at least who are stepping up.
Did Gosling, yes.
That's
or
the
no?
immediate thing that you think about.
Like,
yeah.
Come on, who won the Oscar?
I would guess yes, but we don't know.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
So, yeah, I thought it was Gosling too, which if it is, bless his heart.
Could be Keaton.
So.
Nah, it's not Keaton.
So, it's definitely not Keaton.
Because he had a small role in that movie.
That's funny. So this is not that easy, right? Because, and Emma Stone acknowledges that. She's like, look, there's a lot of factors. There's how much money did your previous movies make? You know, how much perceived star power do you have based on some on just BS gut instinct of the executive, which is where the sexism could come into play. Some is actual metrics. So let's say that it was Ryan Gosling. We don't know, we're guessing here. Well, Ryan Gosling, I think arguably is a bigger star than Emma Stone. On the other hand, Emma Stone's a giant star. And in this movie that she's playing a woman who fought for equal rights.
Yeah,
I mean,
I know,
how is that
name.
For ironic? I don't know what her pay here was, but if they didn't offer her equal pay to as Steven Carell, who's playing Bobby Riggs, when the whole point of the movie is that women are as good, if not better, in some places, and obviously she won that match, that would be deeply ironic. And she arguably now off of La La Land is the bigger star. And you almost never hear of the woman getting paid more than the man. And so, and her point, by the way, is she sticks up for men completely. She's like, if it wasn't for the guys who had done that, I never would be in this place.
Right.
So she's like, I always want to include men in the conversation and their voices and hear, et cetera. So she's great on in every way. But she says, look at the big picture. So on any case, it's hard to decide why they did that at that particular movie. But on average, female actors or actresses get paid 80% of what guys in similar stature get paid.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, then that goes up to the top, even like you're talking Nicole Kidman too. I mean, and Angelina Jolie, I can't remember the exact stat, but like not getting as much as a Tom Cruise, or not even a Tom Cruise, like, you know, like a lesser, you know, I don't know, Ryan Reynolds or something like this. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? You know, so.
Poor Ryan Reynolds is getting thrown under the bus.
Don't
He's
mean
a
to throw
star.
Ryan
did
Reynolds
you watch Deadpool?
He's
a great
did.
Movie.
but just to say, I mean, we're talking millions here. It's all because, like, no one really deserves this amount of money. However, being that they do already make this, I think it's sad to me that it's on individuals to try and fill the void back to, you know, the story of like the, you know, democracy vouchers. It's just like, we've come to this. We've come to individual actors having to take it upon themselves because their industry just can't, you know, give equal pay to try and, you know, equilibria. What am I trying to say? You know,
bring equilibrium.
Bring equilibrium, you know?
Yes.
I get paid more than Cenk.
And what's always, it makes no sense to me. There are some areas where theoretically women make more. You can think of some particular things that are clearly like it's a male audience or it's a male clientele or something. And it always seemed to me like outside of maybe action movies, if anybody is being sort of incentivized to come in and watch a movie based on the gender of a person there, aren't men gonna be more manipulated by that than women? Like, aren't men gonna go to see an Emma Stone more than women would go to see a Ryan Gosling or Ryan Reynolds? It seems like the sort of area where there should naturally be more equality than there already is.
Yeah.
And Hollywood is supposed to be such a liberal place. The fact that there is such a pay disparity there, like how can you imagine progress on some far more conservative areas if even in the arts, in liberal California, we can't get equality?
I think it's interesting where like the managers come in. Like, you know, everyone's just like, Hollywood is just kind of a feeding frenzy off of the stardom of, you know, celebrities, but it's like, Are these people not being represented? Like, is it just sort of an industry-wide agreement? Like, yeah, but you know, sure. And I think your point is well taken, Ryan. I mean, Ryan Gosling is arguably more of a star than Emma Stone, but like
maybe not anymore.
Maybe not anymore. Right,
but when they cast that movie,
exactly, yes. When they cast it. But it's just like, is there just sort of that agreement among the industry and among managers and reps to just like, well,
yeah,
you know,
and
woman,
so right,
woman.
And when you talk about sexism, it doesn't mean, and this is where people maybe on the right wing instead of take like great offense, it doesn't mean you're an evil person, you hate women, and so you wanted to make sure they got less. It just might be the stereotypes that we have in our heads that we don't even realize we have. Like you, maybe we all assume that Ryan, including me, assume that Ryan Gosling is the bigger star because we've been taught that the big stars are guys,
right.
Tom Cruise, Will Smith, whoever, right? And so then we make that assumption. And when executives make that assumption, it has huge consequences. And so to John's point, it's, you know, there's a talking point about liberal Hollywood, liberal Hollywood. No, some of the actors are definitely liberal, no question about that. But the people who make the final decisions are the executives.
Yeah.
And they are executives in giant, multi-billion dollar corporations. So they make decisions based on the bottom line, and oftentimes very conservative actors, in that case I don't mean as in stage, but I mean as in people taking action.
Scott Baio.
So that's a good counterpoint that not a lot of actors are liberal. That's why you have to find a Scott Baio. You got to go reach all the way down to a Scott Baio. But yes, the executives are oftentimes very conservative and not at all what is cast as liberal Hollywood.
Okay, why don't we turn to something that could be in a movie maybe. An Inconvenient Truth we're going to address right now. Antarctica is absolutely huge, but it could become just a little bit smaller any day now. What will become possibly the largest iceberg in human history could break off from Antarctica literally any minute. It could be while we're filming this. Let's bring up this graphic. I want to show you an area of Antarctica, the Larsen Sea ice shelf. And you see a line cutting across there. It was a rapidly spreading crack in the ice. And we're talking about well over 100-mile long crack that was advancing in real time. And now we're talking about a crack that has extended over 120 miles. Only about 3 miles of ice are left keeping this massive iceberg attached to the shelf that it's on. So a tiny little fraction still there. And that could go. There you're seeing that gigantic crack.
Damn.
That's keeping such a huge area. I'm going to give you the numbers, but just, man, take it in. Antarctica is so huge. Jesus, I don't think anybody, and no, nobody knew. but you're seeing there that crack, and that crack is continuing to expand. So let's talk about what will happen when this thing falls off the Larsen shelf there. Satellite measurements show that the eventual iceberg will average 620 feet thick and contain about 277 cubic miles of ice. That's about 1 trillion tons of ice that is suddenly going to detach there and theoretically could either break up or stay together, but in either case could prove dangerous to ships possibly as far up as near South America. And so we're talking about, it's difficult, like people keep saying it's the size of Delaware, it's the size of 20 New Yorks or something like that. But no matter what, how you quantify it, it's huge. And this is not something that happens inside of human history.
So the good news is that I know there's so no, it's bad news overall, but at least it's already in the water.
Yes.
So if it was on land and broke off, it would displace water, and the sea levels would rise even more. So since it's already in the water, that is not an issue.
Yeah.
But they're worried that more.
Why don't I give them the stats on that? So yes, so Eric Rigno, a NASA and University of California Irvine expert on Antarctica, told the Washington Post that Larsen C currently holds back around 1 centimeter of global sea level rise in the form of glaciers feeding into the remaining ice shelf. So they were talking about what we're directly right now concerned about possibly going off. And Cenk is correct. Antarctica is, it's not just floating ice. It's different than the Arctic. You have portions that are already in the water, and then you have portions of ice that are up on land. But what's interesting there is that if those areas that are already in the water break off, it then frees the path for the ice that's on the land to also go. Mm. And that's not just a lot of ice, it's a lot more ice. And so theoretically, the larger fear is that the southward and poleward progression of ice shelf collapse could continue. Farther south, there are ice shelves that, by stabilizing glaciers, are currently preventing vastly more sea level rise than Larsen C does. And look, depending on which scientist you talk to, there's a wide disagreement about how significant it would be if this continued to fall off. But this is a part of some of the apocalyptic sea level rise predictions that we've seen in the past, that this is one of the first phases of it.
Yeah, so I blame Metallica. I mean, they played a concert there 2013.
Oh, they did.
Did they really?
Raise awareness about, you know, global warming and climate change. Just it couldn't.
Did they rock too hard?
They rock that glacial shelf. I don't know.
And now it's rolling off. Rock and roll.
This is fine, though. This is fine. This is fine. Can we just appreciate this? This is fine graphic? Fine.
So, two more dangerous. One is that, like, very like normal one and not related to climate change. It's a giant freaking iceberg the size of Delaware. So, it's going to go into some shipping lanes, including the Drake Passage. And so, you know, you have some possible Titanic-like situations. That's less likely in this modern age where we can see where they are better. And hopefully they're not like the Clinton campaign. And when somebody says, iceberg straight ahead, they actually swerve. But it caused some issues around shipping.
Wait, what was that Clinton campaign's iceberg? Other than like, here, Bernie, take the wheel. Like, I mean. Right.
Yeah, no, we said, hey, watch out. The populace might have a chance of winning. And they were like, no, we don't have to campaign in Wisconsin or Michigan or anything like that. We got this thing on lockdown. Right. What iceberg?
Cool. Just wanted to make sure.
Okay. All right.
So the reason that I wanted to make sure that we cover this, and thankfully there have been people who've been tracking the expansion of the crack over time, and it's been taking a while. Partly I wanted to get out before that thing falls off because it's going to happen. But also because I have a bit of a prediction, I think that humanity is capable of great things. I think that if we understand the significance of the threat that's facing us, we do have the capability to stop it. But we saw, we know that we have a big problem with guns in America, and we had Sandy Hook, and we decided as a country, yes, we will allow a bunch of kids to be gunned down. That is not enough of a shock to get us to do something. And we face, I think, a similar sort of shock here. If an iceberg the size of Delaware can crack off of Antarctica and go floating off around the world, and we do nothing then, I don't know what it will take to shock us into action. Action necessary to save our civilization. And so this is going to be an interesting test for the world.
And again, the scientists do disagree a little bit on how important this particular iceberg is and what kind of consequences it'll have. They do not disagree on why it's breaking off. It's not because it's getting colder, it's because it's getting warmer. And they agree that it is clearly man-made. And so the final danger is when these ice caps melt and the methane trapped inside the ice gets released. You cannot put, literally cannot put that genie back in that bottle. And so when it goes into the, methane is much worse than carbon.
Right.
Thereby making our situation on climate change far more dire.
Yeah.
So it's one thing when they go into the water, you can't bring them back in and reattach it, right?
Gorilla glue.
Yeah. And when they melt and the methane gets released, we can't put it back in, and that's when we're in real, real trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Waterworld the movie was bad enough. It was already a stain on human civilization, but Waterworld the reality.
Yeah. Kevin Costner tried to warn us.
Just, I mean,
we wouldn't listen. Dennis Hopper tried.
Yeah, Dennis Quaid tried.
Dennis Quaid. Was he in it?
No, that was The Day After Tomorrow.
There you go.
But this is the thing. I mean, this is, again, I really get annoyed when I feel like climate change, especially now. I mean, all hats off to Leonardo DiCaprio and all this. But, you know, when it just becomes this sort of, you know, celebrity cause, you know. And that's not actually what's going to make us take action. And like we saw with healthcare, I think it is people in the streets actually saying, we need to switch to renewables. This is doable. And hey, job creator, you know, this is life or death. And so those small handful of people holding out Nebraska against the Keystone XL pipeline, we need to not, you know, develop the tar sands and move that all that dirty oil, you know, out of this country and for whatever, however many hundreds of jobs, you know, few jobs. Those are the heroes in this story, and I hope that there are more of them.
It is a small handful of people versus the people with small hands.
Okay,
and so let's end on a slightly more disastrous story.
Okay. Exactly. Here's some good news for you. The STI gonorrhea is growing increasingly resistant to antibiotics, and in some forms might be literally impossible to cure. WHO did an analysis of literally dozens of countries and found that resistance to antibiotics, the commonly used ones and even the ones used in emergencies, is going up. But don't worry about that, that's not the important thing. Doctors in Japan, Spain, and France have reported individual cases in which they were unable to cure it. Like using any of the antibiotics that they have, even the rare ones, the ones that are for emergencies, nothing. It didn't matter, it's still there. And this is not a small thing. An estimated 78 million people a year are infected with gonorrhea. Jesus, that is a lot. If you aren't familiar with this, you're welcome. But symptoms can include a thick green or yellow discharge from sexual organs, pain when urinating, and bleeding during periods. This is not something that you want. You can avoid it, thankfully, by using protection during sex. But this is an issue, and it can manifest in a couple of particularly dangerous ways. Gonorrhea can infect the genitals, rectum, and throat, but it can be more dangerous in certain of those. So theoretically, when it gets in the throat and people take antibiotics, it can it's sort of a harboring spot for resistance to grow, and there it can sort of become stronger and stronger. They worded it this way at the BBC, thrusting gonorrhea bacteria into this environment through oral sex can lead to super gonorrhea. And so that is why oral sex in particular can lead to the worst kinds of gonorrhea right now.
Thrusting the gonorrhea bacteria?
Mm-hmm. Curious choice of words.
When you grow up, you'll understand.
Okay.
I don't think it's a curious choice of words. I think they literally mean what you think they mean. But yeah, this is a huge problem. I mean, there are STIs that are worse, objectively. There are ones that will literally kill you, drive you insane, and things like that. But this is not a good thing for people to have. And this is not the only STI or the only infection or disease that has this sort of looming threat of antibiotic resistance. The way that we approach antibiotics as a species is fundamentally flawed. It has been for a long time. And it theoretically will take a massive toll in human lives if we don't correct it in the future.
Because it's used more, it's way too liberally.
Exactly, for things that it doesn't need to. And we are developing new antibiotics. Theoretically, we can, although it's becoming harder and harder, slower and slower, rarer and rarer. But gonorrhea in particular, it can overcome all of that. We are not able to come up with one that's gonna kill all strains permanently. And in diseases that are even more deadly, like we need to address this. This is not something that's sexy to talk about, especially with the discharge. But it is something that's important for human civilization.
No, as I was reading this, guys, it sounded like the beginning of an apocalyptic movie. Mm-hmm. Okay, where scientists are warning that we have, quote, a relentless march towards untreatable status. And they give warnings like 66% of reporting countries say one particular strand of gonorrhea is normally treated with, I think, an injection is not responding anymore, okay,
to
treatment.
To, yeah.
Yeah, 81% of reporting countries say that the other strain has now become resistant and not responding anymore. And then you get the reports from Japan, France, et cetera, saying there's no treatment left. And luckily, though, it only affects the genitals, rectum, and throat, right?
Don't need those.
Right. And
I just want cushy diapers. I wonder if you can't die from it, then what's the worst that can happen? Well, and like when we make this film, will we cast Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, will they be paid equally? Just like,
will they produce equal discharge?
Uh-huh, exactly. Okay.
That's my question.
And so then they get into.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm going with you on the apocalyptic thing here.
Yes, because then the next part of the movie is they're like, oh, by the way, you know, can't you see the scientists rushing in the movie, right? Like, it is now called super gonorrhea.
Yeah.
Right? And then, of course, like, in the next part of the movie is what John is alluding to, which is. It's no longer just in the throat, rectum, and genitals. Now we can't treat other diseases that are spreading all over the world and all over the. And by the way, most of the countries are not even reporting, and the poor countries are not reporting in. And the situation is probably more dire in the poor countries. So as we overuse the antibiotics, we become very susceptible to all kinds of diseases. And so that disaster is also looming out there. Super gonorrhea, just the beginning, just an appetizer.
Your weekend plans just changed. Cancel that Tinder date. There's super gonorrhea. But I mean,
we laugh, but then we cry.
But okay, so but in then the US, discharge. What are the cases again? 77 countries?
Yeah. So 77 countries report in, and they're saying the resistance to that that the antibiotics have are increasing and are in we're in dire shape. By the way, I thought the 78 million was how many gonorrhea cases were in the world. No, that's 78 million new cases every year just from the reporting countries.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's a lot.
Maybe be careful.
Oh, yeah, bring back the dental dam.
There you go.
And did it go anywhere? I don't know. It's just
I've got mine.
Yes.
Be responsible, people.
The dental dam. It's always one of the funniest things. I believe that no human has ever actually used a dental dam. And I've got the gonorrhea stats to back it.
We should do a poll. TYT.com or theyoungturks.com/dental dam. Have you ever used it? I would be interested to find out.
Dental dam challenge.
Okay.
I mean, no videos. Just like it
takes two people.
Accounts.
They would be if you did send in the videos. They would be banned in China. All right, guys, we're way out of time. Francesca, thank you. Yeah. Everybody, check out AJ Plus. But they got to go to your specific channel.
Go to Newsbroke. Newsbroke. www.youtube.com/c/Newsbroke. It's the comedy channel of AJ Plus.
My favorite part of this was that you bothered to say www.
Okay. Anyway, hey, now my grandma will know how to find it.
Exactly. Okay? Exactly. It just makes it sound better.
Okay. Anyway. Francesca, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Thank you, John. Everybody, check out Think Tank. And John is going to go and reattach the Larson C shelf.
If I'm in the area.
Okay.
We'll see what
I can
do.
Amazing.
Okay. All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Bye.
Bye-bye.